You're all set for Sunday then, Glenn? You all ready? Got your multimedia presentation?
Yeah, all the whiz bang, everything,
Yeah.
to knock their socks off.
And you'll
But my
be.
talk at the Brass and History Association.
Yeah. And you'll be doing this to you'll be forming a dance around your talk about blind houses, I assume.
A dance.
Yes. After your exploits with God, what was it? The Kate Bush song,
Oh, God.
the hill fort, the burial mound over by Tidworth.
Yeah, this is going to be, people listening to this is going to be really tenuous. They're going to think, what on earth are they warbling on about now? But yeah, going back to that Kate Bush video.
Yes, I seem to remember when we were discussing that before, and you were talking about your dancing abilities, or was it mine? I can't remember.
Well, I think we were trying to work out who was going to imitate Kate Bush in the red dress,
Yes.
prancing around
Oh,
in the Wiltshire
that
countryside.
was definitely you.
Oh dear. So yeah, this Sunday I am doing a talk at the Brass and History Association. First time I've ever done anything like that, actually. And it's going to be on blind houses. And if you listen to this podcast early enough, it may give you enough advance notice to come along in the afternoon. But anyway,
It's 4 o'clock, isn't it?
yeah, it's 4 o'clock.
And where is it?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh no.
I haven't looked up where it is.
You better find out before Sunday.
I bet I had, yeah. I'd probably find out 10 minutes before when I suddenly think, where is that I'm going again?
Yeah. Well,
Let me look that up actually while we're talking.
yeah.
So welcome to another Hidden Wiltshire podcast. We are now up to Hidden Wiltshire podcast number 28?
Oh, 28, I think. Yeah.
28. My name is Glyn Coy, and I started this Hidden Wiltshire stuff aeons ago and roped in a trusted sidekick here to join me on this podcast as normal it is.
Party boy. Oh, sorry, Paul Timlett.
Party boy. That's putting yourself on a pedestal a bit
Yeah,
there, at your age.
let's not talk about party. Well, yeah, quite. Let's not talk about parties, eh?
No, but we've heard quite enough about parties in the last
We have,
couple of days.
yes. Fed up with that.
Anyway, let's not go down another political rabbit hole because we are a politics-free zone on this podcast.
And we'll lose 2/3 of the audience. So.
Yeah, except when something really annoys us in Wiltshire, like sewage in rivers, something like
Yeah,
that.
we'll have a rant about that.
Yeah, we can rant about things that actually are important. Anyway, so yes, the Bratton History Association talks are at the Bratton Church Institute on Tyning Lane. There you go.
At 4 o'clock, and do you have to get have a ticket, or can you just rock up?
I think you can rock up. You have to pay. I think it's £2 for members, £4 for non-members. Don't all turn up, otherwise we might not be able to fit everybody in.
Yeah, I can just
Man of my fame,
I can picture the queues around the corner.
Yeah,
There'll be parking chaos in Bratton.
Yeah, and I am going to be talking about blind houses. So, and that all came from about a year ago, actually. I did an article for the website on Wiltshire's blind houses, and at the time we were all locked down, not able to have parties or even go out the house in your car. So, what I did is I actually asked the Hidden Wiltshire community if they could give me some photos that I could use on the article, and I got a good smattering of photos of blind houses all over the county.
It was great feedback, wasn't there? There's just some brilliant photographs on there.
Yeah, it was really good. And actually, we're going to talk about this a lot today. But if you search for blind houses on Google, it's the number one hit that comes up is my article. And what we're finding is that we keep coming up too high in the Google searches, so we've become the authority on various things, and it's so much so that you've ended up on a being referenced on a Wikipedia page.
Wikipedia site. In fact, I was going to talk about that later, but as you mentioned it, yeah, when I was researching for the main topic, which will we'll come on to. I was googling Long Knoll. I can't say Knoll. Is that Knoll? I was googling that because I was sure that because I did a walk up there and I wrote an article about it and all the rest of it, and I'm sure I read something about the prehistory up there. So I found a Wikipedia entry, and as I went down and looked at references, the first reference was me, which is hilarious.
Paul Timlett, the authority on Long Knoll.
The only authority on Long Knoll. God, if only they knew.
Oh dear, it's quite scary actually.
We're
getting ahead of ourselves really, but yeah, it is funny how a lot of these things, the website gets so much traffic now that literally some of these things that we have up there, you search for it and it does come number one on the Google list, which is quite amusing.
What is even more amusing, which this will be absolutely nothing to people listening, but you and I can see each other, and right now I've got these incredible sun rays coming through the window to my right.
You've got a halo.
I do. Look, I've got a halo. this sort of rainbow of light rays coming. I'm just a silhouette.
I can't see your face at all. You're just a black silhouette, and this
starburst. I'm just going to leave it like that. I'm not going to change it. Oh dear. Anyway, what have you been up to the last couple of weeks?
Not much.
Should we end it there? I think we finished, haven't we?
Yeah, the thing is though, I mean, at the moment it's quite hard to go anywhere walking and enjoy it, because the landscape at the moment represents the Battle of the Somme. There is so much mud everywhere that you bring half of the hill back with you. So I haven't been out doing that many walks. I did do the Sutton Veney Titherington walk the other week, and that wasn't too bad actually.
Because somebody asked on the Facebook group, it was I'm terrible.
Lenka Stokes.
Yeah. So she asked, very good question actually, is, you know, are there actually any walks that aren't like the Battle of the Somme? Because I know for some people it's you know, it's quite difficult. In fact, even for those of us who are reasonably fit and healthy, we end up slithering all over the place, as you will recall from the round way down when you had a lie down in the mud. But it was a good question. So that walk, that Sutton Veney one, is a lot of that is in on sort of pretty well, part of it's on road, isn't it? But it's quite good surfaces up the top there. And then obviously people were sort of pitching in saying we'll try some of the Imber Range path path. It's a blooming great track. It's wide enough for two vehicles to pass on it because it's a byway. And that's pretty mud free, although there are some damn big puddles in those holes in the
I'm heading up that way tomorrow because I'm going up to Nook Castle around there, because I'm going to walk across to Dunscombe Bottom because the sheep are back on. So I'm counting sheep again.
Oh, you're back to counting, are you?
Yeah, 40 this time.
40 sheep, right?
40 sheep. That's going to be a bugger to count.
Yeah. How do you get them to stand still long enough?
You can't. So you got to move fast. It's a bit of an art counting sheep, actually.
Yeah, I noticed Melanie May, who's I think she listens to the podcast, but she's I think she follows us, and has got a brilliant Instagram feed. She posted some lovely photographs from up there. She's been up there counting sheep. It looks fantastic at the moment.
Yeah, I saw those. Mel's really good. She's organised us all to. When the animals go on, she's the one that sends out the email, say, I want to do some counting again, and sets up the sort of calendar thing where we say which days we're going to go up.
Yeah.
It's funny, though. I've followed Mel for years on Instagram, and we do this livestock counting up on Dunscombe Bottom, and I've been doing that for about 4 years. We've never actually met each other. It's one of these weird virtual... friendship type thing.
Whereas I did meet her.
Her and
Wayne up at Folly Wood, they were doing the Folly Wood walk. So yeah, lovely couple, really delightful. Back to mud. As you know, I've done a couple of walks, in fact two this week, One in Wiltshire and one not in Wiltshire, although connected to.
Yeah, and that got me thinking earlier, actually, because I know we bound our discussions inside Wiltshire, but it is tempting sometimes to think, should we just expand it a little bit over the border? Because there are some nice places that are just outside. But
does France and North Uist count?
Well, according to you, it does.
Well, I got.
Although I did see someone put a comment on the page saying, "What's this got to do with Wiltshire?"
Yeah, exactly.
France.
Yeah, I did try and explain in the article what the connection was and why I posted it, but I think people just look at the photographs and
well,
don't
I think
read
what was
article.
Happening is when you get a photo in a set that you put on the page and one of them becomes more popular than the others. The photo appears in the Facebook feed without the accompanying
without
post.
The context.
Yeah, so you just see this random photo of somewhere, and you see hidden Wiltshire, and there's a photo of something they've never seen before, and they're thinking, "Oh, where's that then?
That's
France?"
Right. Yeah, I hadn't appreciated that because that particular photograph of the inside of that burial mound has got sort of loads of you know likes or whatever you call it, you know, a completely disproportionate number. You think, why is everybody liking that photograph? It's not a particularly good photograph. It's just the inside of a burial chamber. But yeah, that would explain it. I hadn't thought of that. But yeah, of course, you've got to read the article to get the context and to why I posted it. But yeah, you're right. I mean, so on Tuesday, I went to the Uffington White Horse and the Castle and Wayland's Smithy, which are on the Ridgeway. And they're not far out of Wiltshire. They're into Oxfordshire. And I only went there because I met a friend who he wanted a bit of a photography workshop. So I did sort of one-to-one with him up there. And it was sort of roughly halfway. So that's why we went. But of course, it's along the Ridgeway and you follow the Ridgeway back into Wiltshire. And you know, I went there partly because I'm reading a book about it at the moment. And I think, as I explained in the last podcast, the guy who wrote the book, when he sort of just, again, putting it in context, he starts his approach to Uffington from Avebury. So he walks the Ridgeway from Avebury over a period of days and ends up at Uffington. But, fascinating place. My God, we think we've got history here. And the more I read into it, I mean, the Vale to the north of the White Horse and Uffington Castle, and you know, really recommend you go there. I mean, I think in the summer it will get pretty busy. I mean, it's a big sort of hotspot for dog walkers, and you can understand why, because the views are incredible. But the Vale to the north, I've been reading about how relatively highly populated that Vale was in going back to Bronze Age. You know, we talk about that a lot in the context of Wiltshire and you know how some of these places would have looked. And how, I mean, you just mentioned Nook Castle. You know, we've talked before about how many people might have lived in that area thousands of years ago, and it's the same at Uffington. And now you've got sort of villages dotted along the Vale. But the book I'm reading at the moment suggests that there were, you know, awful lot of settlements all along the Vale, and these are the people that probably, you know, made the White Horse and built Uffington Castle, which is huge. I mean, you could fit a large village or a small town in there.
Yeah, it's funny. I've never been there. I mean, I've seen it a lot from the train, actually.
Mm.
And when I've been getting the train back from London to Chippenham, you see it.
Because we could hear trains, but we couldn't see them.
Yeah, there's a main line from London through to Bristol.
Right, right.
So, yeah, when I used to commute sometimes occasionally into London, I'd often look out for it.
Mm.
As the train would approach Swindon.
It was interesting, a bit I read just yesterday, actually, about the castle, because when we were looking at it, we thought, well, there must have been quite a substantial community living here. And the evidence suggests, or the archaeological evidence suggests, that nobody lived there. And in fact, it was a meeting place. It was a place for sort of events, gatherings. And again, like so many of our hill forts, great big sort of earthworks, deep ditch, which those days, obviously, the earthworks would have been white with wooden palisades all around it. It would have been incredibly impressive, but people didn't live there, except maybe they went up there for sanctuary, you know, to you know, get away from raiding parties from other tribes and things.
Yeah.
And you do, so it got me sort of thinking about some of our hill forts, and we always assume that maybe there were small communities living in there, and we know that some were animal enclosures, and we're going to get on and talk about that in a bit, in the context of the main subject.
Yeah.
But
there is a theory that they were places of refuge. So
yeah.
If you're under attack, you go and hide in the hill fort.
Yeah. But Wayland Smithy is incredibly impressive. It's like a larger West Kennet long barrow.
Mm.
It's even longer, and it's just, you know, stunning. So yeah, do go there. And the other, but it was, you know, going back to the mud, it was like an absolute quagmire in a lot of places. It was, I mean, at the end of the day, we just thought, bugger it, and you just, what, you know, you dive into it and wade through as best you can.
Yeah.
We were slipping and sliding all over the place. But on Monday, so the day before, Stu and I went up to Tidcombe, which is in Wiltshire. Right on the Hampshire border. And we did the walk from Tidcombe Church to the Long Barrow, over to Hippenscombe. And we did take a short diversion up to the, is it Fosbury, the hill fort there.
Yeah.
And then back up through Hippenscombe. But it was such a grey, drizzly day. And I mean, Hippenscombe is stunning. And, you know, we'll talk about Eric Aurelius in a minute, but it is stunning, very artificial landscape. The whole area is completely given over to pheasant shooting.
Mm.
You know, there's private signs everywhere, there's covert for the pheasants, but you've still got the, you know, the coombe and the path, the track,
yeah,
that's sort of sinuous track that goes all the way up the coombe. It's in better weather, I think it would be, you know, I know it's beautiful.
I've seen some really nice photos of it by actually our good friend Steve Dewey.
Oh yeah,
on his Flickr account, he's got he's done quite a lot of exploring over that way.
Yeah,
and, stunning.
Well, I'm going to write a blog about it, and I'll put the photographs up. But they are really dreary because the weather was really dreary.
Yeah,
and as I say, you can't polish a turd, and these photographs are just grey. So I might be better just going full, you know, full tilt and just make them black and white because there's no colour. But we did find, we also went to look for the, what's it called? The stone.
That unusual stone.
Yes, I knew I'd forget the name of it. It'll come back to me in a minute. But there's a stone up there. And the reason we did this walk, because David Dawson at Wiltshire Museum would like us to organise a walk up there for the museum. So I did it as a bit of a sort of recce. So I sort of plotted a walk, and then we went and did it just to see if it's, you know, if it works, where you can park and all that sort of stuff. So we went to look for this stone. I'm going to look it up whilst we're talking. But
that stone, it's near the Shute Causeway, isn't it?
Yes, it's right at it's on the Shute Causeway. And it's at a T junction where a road comes up from Chute. Is it Chute or Chute? From the villages, because they've got Chute Stand and Lower Chute, Chute Cadley and all that.
Yeah.
And then there's a road that comes up.
The causeway is an old Roman road.
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, because we walked along it for a stretch. I can't find the name.
Is it the Kenwood Stone?
Kenwood, or it's either Kenwood or Kenwood.
Yeah.
Depending on.
Also known as the Devil's Waistcoat.
Yeah. In fact, underneath this piece of paper here, I've written it down. Just realised. Kenwood, or the Devil's Waistcoat. Yeah. So, I know people have sort of struggled to find it in the past, but directions that we had, it was really easy to see. In fact, you can see it from the road if you know where to look.
Yeah.
But it's very peculiar. It's got it's a Sarsen stone, and it's got some markings on it. And I won't talk too much about it because we'll probably sort of do the walk in a podcast, but it's got some peculiar markings, and there's a sort of debate of whether they're natural or man-made.
Yeah.
And also, when you, if you touch the stone, the legend has it, you will surely die. Well, that's complete nonsense. Yeah. because I'm here now.
Yeah, yeah. I think, let's talk about that in another podcast. Tap up Katie Whittaker, who is, as far as I'm concerned, a total expert on Sarsen stones.
Mm-hmm.
And I seem to remember she'd written something about this on Twitter.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's to come. But, we both, in the last couple of weeks, we've both been to the museum, to Wiltshire Museum in Devizes, to see the Eric Revilius exhibition, which was stunning.
It's amazing to see them with your own eyes, isn't it?
Yeah, so that runs till the end of the month, to the end of January, and then it's gone forever because these pieces have been brought in from different collections all over the country.
Yeah, and some of them, when they moved out of the museum, are going to be put away for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember which one he was talking about. It might have been the Causeway one.
I think the Causeway one. He's going to, because I bumped into David when I went to see it, and he said, it's going to be locked in a dark room for 30 years or something.
Yeah.
Because obviously, they're watercolours. So for people who don't know Eric Revilius, there's an exhibition called Downland Man at the museum. And these are all watercolours of sort of chalk downland landscapes. Mostly they are in Sussex and here in Wiltshire. So there's a very famous painting that he took. He made over at Hip and Scoom, so he's looking down into Hip and Scoom, hence doing the walk. And then there's the Westbury White Horse. He painted that. But what I hadn't appreciated was he was a war artist as well. So he was painting sort of down in on the Sussex coast, and the searchlights. Painting sort of the shells that we were lobbing into France and the Germans were lobbing back at us. Yep. He was painting that really striking. But the one thing, and I was saying this to David, is that the thing that really struck me was that, I mentioned this before, I've got a large postcard or whatever it is of the Causeway painting above my head here, recording. Mm-hmm. And I was quite shocked, really, at how muted the colours were in the actual paintings. So the print that I've got here it looks quite brightly coloured.
Mm.
And in fact, the ones they sell in the museum shop, the postcards and stuff, they're all quite brightly coloured. And then you see the real thing, and the colours are very muted. Now, presume that's to do with ageing, which is why it's got to go into a dark room for 30 years. they were almost drab, I think. They were quite sort of, it was almost like camouflage, like sort of military camouflage, the olive greens and the browns and the yellows. But I was really taken aback by that. I expected them to be a lot brighter.
Yeah, but I think one thing that doesn't help is I think the lighting in the galleries is quite muted.
Yeah, yeah.
To try and protect them. So. Yeah. You don't get a full light shining on them.
No, that's a good point.
So I think what I found is I didn't really pick up on the muted colours so much, but what I was doing is I was getting my face quite close into looking at the detail.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny I did that as well because I can't even do painting by numbers. I'm hopeless. But I was getting right up close and just looking at the brush strokes, which are just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and the sort of the stippling effect, and God, the patience these guys have.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And of course, it's he died relatively young, didn't he? I think he was 39 when he died.
Yeah, he died in a plane crash. 1942 in Iceland. Yeah. Died in Iceland.
Yeah. Very sad.
Yeah.
Very talented artist. Yeah. And his son was a supremely talented photographer as well.
Yeah, and I hadn't realised he had, because we always talk about James Revilius, his son, or we do, but he also had another son, who was John, I think. I think the firstborn was John, if I remember rightly. But real loss. He died far too young, as did James.
Yeah.
He was relatively young when he died. Anyway, where are we going this morning? what we're going to talk about?
Well, we're going to go to a part of Wiltshire which is quite well known because it's over by Stourhead, but we're not going to talk about Stourhead. We're going to talk about various places around there that aren't so well known. So with that suspenseful introduction, let's have some music. Okay, so this week we're going to start off... Actually, we're not going to do a walk because we do a lot of walks. But I'm going to talk about various places around that sort of Stourhead area where you can go and you can craft your own walk, really. But there's lots of different places around there that are of interest. So I thought we'd start off just by having a quick look at White Sheet Hill. So White Sheet Hill is it's like a chalk downland hill as you get in lots of parts of Wiltshire, which is just the other side of the Deverells. So actually when you're up there on the hill you can sort of link routes and walk through to the Deverells and the other side of the valley. But White Sheet Hill is actually owned by the National Trust. It's part of the sort of Stourhead estate, but quite separate from it. But I know when I went up there for the first time a few years ago, I was absolutely blown away by how much two things. One, how much ancient history there was in that landscape. There's a lot. And the second thing is the views are absolutely stunning up there.
Just to orientate people, so if you don't know where it is, it's sort of east of the B3092 between Maiden Bradley and Stourhead.
Yeah.
And it's a place, if you haven't been up there, you'll be familiar with it, you'll have seen it, and it's quite striking, it's quite imposing because of the prehistory up there, which we can talk about.
Yeah, it is. And one of the things as you often get on these hill summits, there's an Iron Age hill fort up there where the shape is still quite discernible. So you can go and explore the ramparts. But as you go up the hill, you sort of walk, you skirt past quite a prominent Bronze Age bowl barrow on your left, which is very often I go up there and you see people sat on it just looking at the views. And then you follow the hill, the contours of the hill to the right, and you'll end up at the ramparts of the hill fort. And I think there's a right to roam over all of that sort of area.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, just got the map in front of me now.
Open access.
Yeah, and it's quite a big open access area, actually.
Yeah. So you can craft lots of... I mean, there's a Roman road that skirts the top as well.
Yeah. So, actually, if you look at the Ordnance Survey map, the one to 25,000, it shows these right to roam areas. So it's kind of sort of bordered with... sort of thick brown shaded line. Mm. And you go from the parking area up to the hill and the downs, but then there's like a sort of a bit that sort of snakes all the way along the Mid Wilts Way, and it goes quite a long way to the northeast and then to the east.
It almost follows the contours The shape of the hills up there is quite extraordinary, and there's a lot of sort of ridges and terracettes that come down the hillsides. It's very, very steep.
Yeah.
And a number of different, here we go again, bottoms.
Yeah.
There's lots of bottoms.
They're everywhere.
That then point in the direction of Mere.
In fact, the one that sort of heads down to Mere is called Great Bottom.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, as you were just saying, straight out of the car park and up the hill. It's quite steep, isn't it, when you first go up there?
Yes.
But you know, on just right by the parking symbol on the map, you've got you know, pillow mounds marked there. Which are, what are they? Trying to date those. Are they Bronze Age pillow mounds?
Not sure actually.
Can't remember. And then up to a Neolithic camp is marked, which is a causeway enclosure from about 3000 BC.
Yeah, you can that. You can sort of make out the shape of that if you know what you're looking for. But otherwise, it's quite unremarkable. But I tell you what really opened my eyes to it was a few years ago, the drone photographer David Abrams went up there and took a photo of the causewayed enclosure, and you can really see the shape of it. It's quite impressive. So David Abrams is doing an exhibition at Salisbury Museum at some point in the future. It's definitely worth having a look at when that happens. I don't know when it is.
I don't know. In fact, I'm hoping to go there tomorrow. So if I can remember, I'll have a look. The just going back to White Sheet and looking at all the sort of, because you go up onto the downs there, and then it's you've got sort of almost like a sort of plateau, haven't you? And it just sort of extends all the way to the east, and you can just walk for miles along there. And the views, particularly to the south, are just, you know, incredible. You know, right down into Dorset, and you look west to Somerset. I've only been up there once. Can you believe? And the day I went, I can't remember if it was particularly sort of blue. No, I think it was quite cloudy. But every now and then the sun would sort of come, would break through, and you get these incredible shafts of light, sort of picking out parts of the landscape. And I shot some photographs like that there on my little camera that I carry around in my pocket. And it was just an incredible scene. I wish I took the wrong camera. I should have taken the big one with the tripod and everything. But it was just amazing views.
If you get to the right place though as well, you can see all the way down to Mere.
Yeah.
Now Mere is a bit of a strange one because it's in a sort of flat basin, but there is a quite prominent hill at the back of it. I think it's called Castle Hill.
Yes, it is. Long Hill.
Yeah, it's Long Hill is the sort of, it's like a ridge shape almost.
Yeah.
But the actual main mound, I think, is Castle.
Yeah, where the map just says castle, brackets, site of.
Yeah, because I think there was a castle there in the 1200s.
That's right, And of course, that, you know, there's no way that's hidden because you can see it from the A303.
Yeah, it's very prominent. Mm. It does make me wonder. I'd sometimes wonder, was that a man-made hill? But I don't think it can be.
I did look at that. I read somewhere that it wasn't. Although you're right, I mean, it just looks. Silbury Hill, for example, is very evidently man-made, and it's not a cone like that. But it looks too perfect, doesn't it, to be natural.
Yeah, and I think I think the top's been flattened because when they built the castle, they flattened it. It's quite nice actually. You can park in the centre of Mere and just walk up to the top of that hill, and you get views back over towards White Sheet Hill, which is very nice.
Yeah.
But it's a bit noisy because you're close to the.
Tom, just going to flit around again like I normally do. Just back to White Sheet. And the tracks along there. Before we started recording, you know, I was looking for something. We talk about artists and creative people. So there's a link coming here. The poet Percy Shelley, or Percy Bysshe Shelley.
Yes.
His first wife was a lady called Harriet Westbrook. And I'm pretty certain I read somewhere that her father owned this blooming great sort of country mansion, not far from White Sheet and from Mere. And I'm pretty certain that she lived there. When I was Googling it earlier on, I all I could find was references to London, and because I think he was a coffee merchant or something. But I'm so maybe people can help us out there. And, you know, Harriet Westbrook, because she doesn't have a Wikipedia entry, but I think her sister, from memory, does. And I can remember we were talking, maybe with a podcast, we were talking about this before, but I read a book, and it's a trilogy, which I've mentioned before, and it's a novel, but it's based on a lot of sort of historical events. And in this book, this guy, the author, describes how Percy Shelley met Harriet Westbrook on one of the tracks that goes past White Sheet Hill. And you know, in the story, she had dropped a note or something. Oh, that's right. It wasn't Percy Shelley that met her there. It was this traveller who was walking along there, and he passed this lady, this young woman, who dropped a letter, and he picked it up, and he looked at it, trying to sort of find out, you know, who this lady was, so he could return this letter. And in the story, it turns out the letter was from Percy Shelley to this lady who turned out to be Harriet Westbrook. So there's obviously some sort of connection down there. Now that's clearly, well, I assume it's an invented story. But you know, it's based on the sort of connections that Shelley's wife had, and therefore Shelley himself in this part of the world. But I will keep Googling when we've finished and see if I can find that original source.
Yeah. Another thing that's of interest, though, if you're in the car park at the bottom of White Sheet Hill, instead of going up the hill, if you follow a footpath through fields to the west, it leads to a green space, which is called Beech Clump.
Yeah.
Now, inside there, because it's on the Beech Clump is actually on an elevated piece of land. It's on a little small hill. But in there, you'll find what's known locally as the Dakota Memorial.
Oh, yeah, that's where it is, isn't it? Okay.
Yeah, it's in that Beech Clump. And because apparently there was, well, first of all, near here, you had RAF SEALs during World War II. And RAF SEALs is long gone. But you can still see, you still make it out. If you look on Google aerial maps, you can see the actual shape of the runways and the boundaries. And there is a sort of an old building, which I think was the sort of tower.
It's a control tower, that's right.
Control
yeah.
tower. It's now a private house, but you can clearly see it's a control tower yeah. shape. And I know that when Stourhead's busy, they often move the cars onto the old RAF base to park around autumn time. But yeah, I think there was a fairly catastrophic crash, which I think John Gretsch wrote up something
on
the website about this. On the 19th of February, 1945.
That's not when John wrote his article. That's when the crash happened.
Yes,
just to be clear.
Just to clarify. just for the avoidance of doubt. but yeah, 20 airmen were killed. They crashed into that clump. And actually, the committee that kind of took the action to create this memorial to remember these guys was, I think, David Carson was involved in that.
Who's he?
Our good friend.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I posted something about it on Twitter, and he told me the story that a few of them got together and, you know, worked to create this memorial.
Yeah.
It was quite a sad story, though, because I think one of the people survived.
The pilot.
Yeah, and there is a sad story. I think he ended up committing suicide years later. It's very sadly.
Yeah, because you read the reports, it suggests sort of pilot error caused the crash. He didn't climb high enough, and he hit the trees.
Yeah,
it was low cloud, and he just didn't go high enough.
Yeah, he was flying in poor visibility.
Yeah, I tell you what, when I was sort of reading John's article, and you look down the list of they would have been young men that died, and it showed what their, you know, what they did in the, they're all services personnel, and I think all Air Force. There was a mixture of Canadian Air Force and Royal Air Force, and the number of pilots that were listed amongst the dead.
Yeah.
And you think of, you know, that in terms of, you know, sort of war effort and, you know, the number of young pilots who died during the war, and to lose that many pilots in one crash must have been, had a, you know, big impact. Now, what I don't know is whether they were, you know, what sort of pilots they were, because I think it was that particular flight was, I think it was sort of described as a glider pickup flight or something, and it was a training flight. So I assume they would sort of, I don't know if they sort of land and then collect a glider that had put down in a field somewhere, and then sort of fly them out. And assume they were training for sort of, you know, the invasion going back into Europe. So maybe they were all glider pilots. I don't know, but it just really struck me, the number of, you know, pilot after their name.
Yeah. Very sad.
Yeah.
Thing is, I mean, you may not have done so much walking around White Sheet Hill, but you did, I think this is probably my fault, you did do a walk just north of White Sheet Hill, didn't you? And
yeah.
For Long Knoll and Little Knoll. I think that was on my list of places to
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
To visit.
So I decided to
You took the challenge.
To go. Yes, I did. That may have been a foolish challenge as well in hindsight. But so if you were driving down the B3092 that I mentioned earlier on between Maiden Bradley and Stourhead, so if you were heading south towards Stourhead, and just south of Maiden Bradley, the road sort of passes between two hills, and to your left, to the east, is Little Knoll, and to the right, to the west, is Long Knoll. So I decided to sort of put a walk together that would take in the two knolls, and then, you know, having sort of driven up there, it needed to be a circular walk. I don't like doing out and backs. So that's what I did. So I parked at Kilmington and sort of tried to get up to Long Knoll from there, because Long Knoll is the one that's nearest to Kilmington. And it turned out to be a bit of an epic. It was a filthy day. It was thick fog, and I expected the fog to clear and to get great views. So across the valley, if you like, across to the other side of that B road, you can see White Sheet Hill from there. There's sort of good views of it. And then again, as we were saying earlier on, down to south into Dorset and to Somerset. And I was on Long Knoll in this thick fog, and it was absolutely freezing. I mean, I had God knows how many layers on, including a down jacket, and I was still cold. And I was sort of just sitting there, and because again, it a bit like a sort of mini White Sheet. It's there's a lot of prehistory up on Long Knoll. You know, there's a couple of Bronze Age bowl barrows, one of which Colt Hall excavated. You know, there was inhumation there. There was a skeleton, I think, discovered there. Romano-British coins. So, you know, there was a later occupation after the Bronze Age. There's a parish sort of boundary bank and ditch up there, which follows along the length of the knoll. So there's a lot of earthworks up there. And I could just remember sort of being huddled out, because it was windy as well. Unusually, it was thick fog and it was windy. Normally wind clears the fog. And I was just huddled down behind this earthwork, trying to keep warm, waiting for this fog to lift so I could get photos, you know, across the landscape. In the end, I had to give up and just sort of carried on along the knoll. But getting up there, getting up to the knoll, again, it's very, very steep. Even steeper than White Sheet, and I was almost on my hands and knees, my sort of camera gear on my back.
Yeah, it's quite a prominent hill.
Yeah,
and it's called Long Knoll because it's long, it's about a mile long, but it's this it just rises from the ground.
Yeah,
it's very visible as you're driving through, and you can see it very well from the top of King Alfred's Tower.
Yeah,
and actually, it's one of only two hills in Wiltshire that are classified as a Marilyn.
That's right, yeah. Can't remember how many metres it was now. Did see that somewhere. But yeah, it's a big old hill and the views are fantastic. But I think, I mean, we'll put a link to the blog in the show notes, but the walk was, here we are, 288 metres. I thought I'd read that. But the walk up from Kilmington, which is dead flat, was one of those very, very annoying walks where you've got sort of footpath signs that have been removed or sort of half destroyed, paths which have been ploughed up, and a house had been built right across the right of way on one of them.
I think that right of way has been moved now.
Yeah, it has.
It was going through their garden, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I'm looking at the map and it looks like it's been moved to the left.
Because I remember you were complaining because it looked like they chopped the top off the public footpath sign.
Yeah.
Chainsawed it off.
Yeah, which presumably they had because the footpath of the right of way had been moved. But even, I did find my way to the amended routes. And even then, it looks like you're going up somebody's drive and just going across some fields. There was no signage. There was nothing. In fact, there was, from memory, I think it was a graphic design studio there. And I had to go and knock on the door and say, look, am I in the right place? And they were very friendly. And they said, yeah, just head across the fields there. But of course, being thick fog, couldn't see anything, couldn't see the stars. I mean, I had to use all my old-fashioned navigational skills, map and compass, and you aim to the next point you can see, take a bearing and walk to it, which was clods of earth in this ploughed field, and walk to that, take another bearing. So it took me an hour and a half to walk about a mile up to get to the top of Long Knoll. I can't see any other sort of easy way to get up there. And then, of course, once you are up there, to avoid just going back on yourself, you walk the whole length of Long Knoll and you end up being tipped out onto the B3092, which is a pretty dangerous road, I have to say. It's pretty fast. And the track doesn't go on. You're forced to either climb over a fence or a gate or something, or walk along the road, which at that point I wouldn't recommend it because the visibility is pretty poor. There's some sharp bends. But if you wanted to get on to Little Knoll, then that's what you've got to do. You've got to walk a length of the road to get through onto a track that skirts to the south of Little Knoll. But Little Knoll is, which I didn't know at the time, but I now know, is open access. So once you taken your life in your hands and got across the B3092, you're up onto Little Knoll, and again it's like a mini Long Knoll, as the name would suggest, and it's just this hummock of earth straight up to the top, and again the views are staggering. Of course, by the time I got up there, the fog had lifted and the sky was blue, and I mean, what a transformation. Some amazing views to be had up there. But mostly what I remember is just the mud and the trudge to get back. it wasn't the best of days.
No. I'll tell you what, though. Once, when I was on White Sheet Hill, there was an information board which told you about the ancient history on the site. I think the National Trust must have put it up. But it got me scratching my head a bit because it referenced another hill fort that's local to here that was called Park Hill. Park Hill Camp, I think it is, which is right on the other side of the valley. It's over up on above Stourhead. It's actually over towards more towards Alfred's Tower in the woodland. So what I did is I did another trip over that way. I parked over by Alfred's Tower. There's a nice car park over there. And I think it was there where that chap put the video up on the Facebook group about the stone,
the plague stone. I've posted about it on the Facebook group as well, because having seen his video, I went to find it, And once you know where to look, very easy to find, right by the road.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just a little bit further past the Alfred's Tower car park. And there is a little pull in there. There's a little lay by, and it's just sort of opposite that. But yeah, it's that sort of area.
Yeah. But what I did is I followed, there's a huge wood there, which is under the management of the National Trust. And I followed various tracks to, I was heading over to a part of the wood called Shady Hanging. And just north of that on the Ordnance Survey map is marked out the shape of a fort. And again, when you go over there, there's information boards up which tell you about it. And one of the things it says is that there's been no archaeology done there.
Yeah.
So they don't actually have a dating for it, but it's probably Iron Age. But they've chopped down the trees in the middle, so you can clearly make out the shape of it now.
Yeah.
And have a good walk in and a wander around. And I remember at the time I put my drone up to get an aerial shot of it. Probably shouldn't say that because the National Trust don't like you buying drones.
Yeah, that's right. You didn't know at the time, did you?
No, I didn't know at the time, so I plead ignorant.
Yeah.
And of course, nobody ever puts their drone up at Stourhead.
No.
I've never seen any drone photos on Instagram.
No, today. Never. No. don't be sarcastic.
No. But you can walk there from inside Stourhead, from the sort of lake area.
Yeah.
You head up Six Wells Bottom. And veer to your left, it's up on the hill there. It is worth a look.
I was sort of reading your blog about that the other day, and I've never ever been into those woods there, and it is a huge area, isn't it?
It's huge, yeah.
I mean, it goes all the way, all the way up to Alfred's Tower, and I mean, it just goes on and on. And I always sort of tend to go up Six Wells Bottom to the top and then sort of hang a right and then back down to Stourhead. But if you go left into those woods, so I had no idea until you reminded me about your blog that fort was even there.
No, not many people know about it at all. And those woods, they do. I mean, they if you follow them, they link all the way up to almost up to Warminster.
Yeah.
Longleat area.
Yeah.
Huge.
And that's another of these peculiar, mysterious woods, which I might have sort of talked about before, but. Again, I'm trying to find out there, trying to remind myself of the name, but just to the north of Kilmington is a place called Gare Hill, G-A-R-E. And in my more active cycling days, we used to do club runs along the road that goes over sort of Gare Hill. And you've got those woods there. They continue sort of to the south, and it's all marked Witham Park and Kingswood Warren, all the way down to Alfred's Tower. But if you go along that road that goes over Gare Hill, so you're heading sort of vaguely in the direction of Froome, a bit like Furze Knoll, you know, listen out for birdsong.
Right.
You won't hear any. It's always, it's just a spooky place. It's always silent. And when we used to ride along there, you get a group of, I don't know, half a dozen riders or whatever, or however many, and there was always like a hush descended on the group as we, because you know, you chatter away when you ride along and people get annoyed because we have to shout because we can't hear each other. But on that bit, you know, you ride along and every just go quiet and you listen, and there was nothing, no bird song.
Yeah, must be haunted or something then.
Well, there are stories, yeah, there's definitely all sorts of weird and wonderful stories, which probably for another time. But there's lots to see in that part of the world, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's sorry, you did mention I'm distracted because I'm looking at my map here. From Little Knoll, the views, and you said that this area is near to the Deverils, and the view from Little Knoll over to the Deverils, and particularly to sort of Cold Kitchen Hill and all that area that we've talked about before, again, absolutely stunning. And you see all the way down the sort of the River Wylie, down the Deverill Valley, over to, well, I don't know, probably towards Sutton Veney in that direction.
Yeah. Well, I know if you do either one of the Deverill walks that we've got on the website, you get very good views of Little Knoll and Long Knoll.
That's right, looking back west towards back. The Knolls, yeah.
And you can see King Alfred's Tower in the distance as well. It kind of, yeah, it's a very distinctive landscape and really worth exploring. I highly recommend it.
And one of your blogs that you've written about this area, you I think you had some pictures where you could see, was it you or was it somebody else, where you could see right over to the Somerset coast and you could see Hinkley Point Power Station.
Oh, yeah, that was me.
That was you, was it?
It was. I was up on the top of King Alfred's Tower on a really clear day.
Oh, that was it, yeah.
So I was having a really good look around to see how far can I actually see up here. And you could see right across to the Somerset coast.
Yeah, astonishing.
All the way over to Hinkley Point.
Yeah.
And I don't know how many miles that is. It must be 40, 50 miles.
Yeah, got to be. But that photograph you took, I mean, it was really clear. I mean, you could make out the nuclear power station there.
I think it was. I had a decent zoom lens on, but it wasn't like my really super duper one. It was a mid-range one. So yeah, it was fantastic clear day, and you can see Glastonbury Tor clear as a whistle.
Oh, that was it. That was the other landmark. Yeah.
Yeah, and you can look across as well, see down to deep into Dorset.
Mm.
But there are some guides up there which kind of tell you what to look for in the landscape, saying you know in that direction you see a blah. But you can see all the way up to Warminster and. I think you can actually see as far as Roundway Down and Oliver's Castle. You can see that quite clearly.
That's right, yeah.
So it's a fantastic viewpoint if you go up there.
I tell you what, I just look at my notes again, back to the two knolls. And I didn't know this at the time when I did the walk, but on Long Knoll, as you sort of head east towards Little Knoll, there is, and I don't remember seeing it, but there's a building up there. And it's Wiltshire's only surviving Cold War visual reporting post. And it's the only one that survives. So, again, that's something for John Gretsch, isn't it?
Where is that?
So you go up to Long Knoll from Kilmington side. Yeah. You get up to where all the earthworks and the burial mounds are. And you follow the knoll all the way along. And it's right as you start to descend towards that B road. I think it'll be on your right somewhere. And I don't recall seeing it, but it's marked on the map. I don't think it's marked as it doesn't say what it is, but there is a building there. But apparently it is this Cold War reporting post. Anyway, I think we're about done here, aren't we?
I think we are. Yeah. So we can wrap up as normal.
Yeah. Have we got any thoughts for the next episode?
No.
No.
you?
Well, yes. Yeah. But,
okay.
We'll talk about that. So we'll leave people in suspense on that, I think.
Yeah.
I promise you
we will be back in 2 weeks' time. We will have something to talk
about. Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. So anyway, thanks to Steve Dixon, as usual. So the piece we use there, we're back round to using old stuff now, although there's plenty of it. But there's that was called Downlands, which again seemed appropriate. I think we used it on something like podcast number 5, so we've not used it for a while. So thanks, Steve. Still waiting for the new material, mate, if you're listening. The website for show notes, links, and the online shop where you will find the book or books.
Yes. Still got quite a few copies left.
Yeah.
So do feel free to go and purchase your own copy.
Yeah, we seem to have sorted out the post issues now, I think.
Yeah, we sorted that out.
Although one of my brothers is still waiting for his a month after it was posted, so I might have to take him another one. But, go into the shop and you'll see them available there.
Yeah. Otherwise, they're available in Devizes Books, in Devizes, and...
Wiltshire Museum.
Wiltshire Museum, in the shop.
Yeah.
So, I guess we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Yeah.